Chapter 18, Hawaii. I must have looked like the living dead when I walked into the gym. HMC was written on the wall. My best guess was Hawaii Martial Arts Center, but I could have been way off. The receptionist had one of those first iconic iMac computers on the desk, and white plastic chairs were placed by the wall. I dropped myself heavily in one of them and stared at the few people training kickboxing on the mat. I must have been sitting there for 10 or 15 minutes without moving at all before someone suddenly approached me. It was Leandro, the instructor. He was a short, stocky, bald Brazilian with a firm handshake. He looked a bit suspicious as he asked me where I trained, like he was getting ready to tell me I couldn't train with them if I was from a rival team. I told him about my trip and that I was affiliated with everyone and no one. He lit up in a big smile and welcomed me to his place. My brain felt numb. I had come straight to the gym from the plane and had only had 2 hours of sleep during the overnight flight, so I made sure he knew that I probably couldn't go very hard. People had started to show up for the class. Everyone was super friendly, came right over to say hi and to hear where I was from and so on. The warm-up went okay, but I was really dizzy. Front and back rolls confused my inner gyroscope a lot. Leandro was teaching a series of guard passing. He was very intense when he explained things. "You have to fight for this grip, like a dog," he almost shouted at the end of the sentence and reminded me that I was about to fall asleep again. On several occasions, I zoned out for a few minutes, looking at the palm tree tops and green hills that were visible through the little window in the wall. It is still hard for me to believe how I managed to do 5 rounds of sparring that day. Fortunately, everyone was nice to me and no one tried to go hard. My last round was with Leandro. It was one of those humbling experiences where I was reminded that I am still just a little boy trying to learn jiu-jitsu. He completely killed my game, doing whatever he wanted with me. His grip was unbelievably strong. When he grabbed my sleeve and pulled it, I could see the muscles of his wrist flex, looking like they had been doing nothing but gripping gis for an entire lifetime. It was hard not to laugh every time he swept or submitted me. Everything he did looked so easy and obvious. I, on the other hand, looked like a white belt zombie. After training, I was sitting around on the mat talking to the guys from class. A few of them had been following my blog already and knew about my trip. Neither me nor they had expected me to be in that gym that day though. When I said goodbye and went back out into the sun, I had 5 phone numbers, 3 Facebook ads, an invitation to come watch UFC, and an offer to stay in someone's house. I texted Jonathan to say that I'd just arrived in Hawaii and had already been to the first training, keeping up with the pace from Singapore and Manila. He said he would contact a few of his friends who could show me around for training, surfing, and sightseeing. It took about 10 minutes before I had 5 or 6 contacts ticking in on my phone. The magical jiu-jitsu community would take care of everything. There was no need for me to bother my brain about what to do, where to go, or where to sleep. Everything would be just fine. Steven was waiting for me at the mall. I had no idea what kind of guy he would be. I had always been talking directly with people I would stay with before I met them. That gave me a chance to get an idea about what type of person they were. This meeting was all set up by Leah, a reader of my blog, so it was a real blind man date. I hoped we would click so it wouldn't be awkward to stay in his house with his whole family. He looked Hawaiian, tanned, in good shape, and wearing fight shorts and an MMA shirt. If I had expected something, he was probably exactly that. The back of his truck was full of puzzle mats and tie pads. His former gym had lost their facilities, so now he drove all the equipment around town to do group classes in a public park and privates in people's own houses. As a professional MMA fighter, he could get just enough students to make a living out of it. It was really interesting to see how someone made training their job through the use of a truck instead of a gym. Steven lived with his big Hawaiian family in a wooden house high up on a hill. I opened the double door and walked inside with my backpack on my shoulder. Steven's cousin was sitting alone, eating by the dinner table. The grandparents were on the couch watching UFC on a small TV in the corner. The typical insecurity of being in someone's home struck me a little again. I said hi to everyone and felt bad about having to go directly to bed. It was only 9 in the evening, but I had nothing left in me. Steven offered me his room that had not much else than a nice big bed, a massage chair, and a guitar. It was everything I could wish for at that point though. Before I fell asleep, I wrote a group text message to all the numbers that Jonathan had sent me, hoping that some of them would have time to meet up with me or maybe even offer me a place to stay. I woke up the next morning with the sun in my face. I had been too tired to close the curtains the night before. Outside, I could hear the sound of birds, dogs, and the wind gently whispering through the palm leaves. The walls were so thin I could hear every sound from every room. I got out of the bed. My legs were wobbly as I sneaked my way to the bathroom down the hall. I tried to be quiet and not be seen or heard by anyone. Once, I got caught in the bathroom in the sports center where my gym is. The men's room was occupied by 2 boys with Down syndrome and I was in a serious hurry, so I thought I'd sneak into the ladies' room. As soon as I had locked the door, about 20 women in their 60s entered the room during their afternoon dance class lunch break. I tried to ride it out, but after 15 minutes, they started to become nervous that I was feeling sick since the door was locked and no one came out. Directly entering the list of the top 5 most ridiculous things I've ever done in my life, I faked a female voice for a while to try and convince them not to have someone kick in the door and check on me. Now that they maybe thought I was a woman, I couldn't just leave and thereby reveal my true identity. They took forever to finish, and after half an hour, I eventually had to blow my cover. Their disappointed faces revealed clearly what they were thinking of me. I looked in the mirror while brushing my teeth in the Hawaiian bathroom. The size of the circles under my eyes had set an all-time record. The clock on the wall behind me showed 9:30. I had slept for 12 and a half hours straight. Back in the room, I picked up my phone from the floor where it had been charging. 5 new messages. 24 hours earlier, I had landed on the island with no friends, contacts, or ideas of where to train or sleep. Now I had about 10 locals to hang out, train, and surf with. My relaxing vacation in Hawaii had the potential to be yet another of my high-paced, busy schedules where I tried to cram as many experiences as possible into a short visit. I spent a few hours sitting in the sand in Waikiki Beach with my shorts and rash guard packed in a little plastic bag before Stephen picked me up and took me to the park where he was training. The place had a little concrete pavilion next to a baseball field. Lots of kids were playing in the grass as we laid out the puzzle mats on the hard floor. It was only me, Stephen, and two other guys, and we rolled Noki for an hour in the warm afternoon sun. It was burning hot when the sun hit the exposed skin on my legs, but at least my knee felt fine, and the long night's sleep had done wonders for my energy level. It was interesting to visit a small group like this one that just trained in a park. Even the most faraway places I had been on the trip, everyone had some sort of gym as a minimum, except of course the interim beach gym in Boracay. Here, it was just three guys trying to teach and train themselves on dirty blue puzzle mats in the sun. Victor, a customer of Jonathan's Ripstop Kimonos, had invited me to go for a little trip uphill just outside of town. He said it was about 1,000 steps to the top and a really nice walk. He even tempted me with a bowl of acai afterwards. I was up for the challenge. 1,000 steps didn't sound too bad. It was. As we got there, I realized that each step was about half a meter above the prior, so it was basically 1,000 lunges to the top, plus a few hundred more that weren't mentioned in the disclaimer. It took us a good hour or so to get to the top, which included several stops to rest. My legs were killing me. Stephen had once carried a big heavy bag all the way up there, together with Chris Lieben and some other fighters. When they got to the top, the chain broke, so they had to carry it down again and go get a new one to do it all over. Victor was right, though. It was worth it. From the top, we had a panoramic view over the entire Honolulu area. Beaches, hills, palm trees, scenic roads snaking their way through the landscape, skyscrapers and hotels. It was everything I had imagined Hawaii would look like. We talked a lot about training and life while walking up and down the 1,000 steps. When we got down again, Victor had to get to work and I had a surfing date with Stephen and his girlfriend. They were waiting for me at Waikiki Beach. It was a beautiful day with a clear blue sky. Lots of tourists walked around the beach promenade as we tried to zigzag our way to the beach with our boards. Stephen had gotten me an enormous 11-foot longboard. One wrong turn on the sidewalk and I would shovel 3 or 4 kids in swimsuits around like a carousel door. His own was no more than 5.5 inches. He held it in one hand while laughing at me from trying to navigate my cruise ship between the pedestrians without hitting anyone. I must have looked like the biggest tourist surfer noob of all time. The water was clear and warm as we walked in. I strapped the cord to my left ankle and positioned the board in front of me, then jumped on. The immediate feeling of floating on it and getting the first little push forward in the water triggered something inside of me. It made me happy. I was finally back on a board and eager to catch my first wave in no other place than the famous Waikiki Beach of Hawaii. I was like an enthusiastic white belt who had just discovered jiu-jitsu, thought about it every day since, and now stepped onto the mats of a legendary gym in Brazil. History was in the air and in the water. We paddled out to our spot and sat on the boards. Hundreds and hundreds of people were in the water, sitting and waiting for the right waves to come in. Surf lessons were going on all around us, and everyone from kids to grandparents seemed to have been bitten by the bug. "Go, Christian, turn around and paddle. Now, hurry up." Stephen's experienced eye had called out a slight ripple in the water. Like some mystical Native American chieftain from an old Western movie, his intuition of the wind, star alignment, and nearly invisible patterns in the wave sets told him exactly when it was time for me to go. Myself, I couldn't see anything, but I turned the board around and started paddling as hard as I could. He was right. As I looked back, the little ripple had started to rise up behind me, building to become a full-sized, beautiful turquoise wave. I tried not to panic, focused on keeping my balance, getting my feet in the right position, and eyes forward. I couldn't feel the wave yet, but I knew it was right behind the soles of my feet. A roaring sound surrounded me, and I felt nature pushing me forward, quickly accelerating my board. The wind whistled in my ears, and splashes of water hit me in the face. I wanted to wipe it off, but my hands were busy grabbing onto the side of the board like a push-up. It wobbled a little bit, but I managed to stabilize it. My heart pounded, and my tunnel vision focused on the nose of the board, making sure there was no one ahead of me I could crash into. Stephen shouted something behind me. There was no more chaos. The wave that had seemed so brutal and violent had turned gentle and smooth. I had conquered it, and it had accepted me as its friend. Standing up, I got a full view of everyone in the water, the beach, and the beautiful city in front of me. The rays of the sun hit my entire body and warmed me up as I gently rode the board for what seemed like more than 100 meters, almost all the way to the shore. It was by far the longest ride I'd ever done in my short career on the waves. I jumped off and raised my hand with a thumbs up to Steven and his girlfriend, who were just little spots in the water. They waved back at me. I had made it to Hawaii and I was surfing on Waikiki Beach, something I had never imagined I would do in my life. It was hard to believe how far jiu-jitsu had taken me. In the evening, I fired up Facebook on my iPad. 20 new friend requests from the last 24 hours. Too many messages with invitations and suggestions to reply in one evening. I wished I could visit all of them. Been reading about your journeys in Oahu. I have a gym in Honolulu and would love to have you over for some training. Hit me up if you're interested. Regards, Rylan. It seemed like there was a lot of training going on in Honolulu, and I was determined to check out as much of it as possible, so I wrote back to Rylan. He replied right away, and the next morning he picked me up outside of the house. Just like Steven, he was a dark-skinned, native Hawaiian, athletic guy with a big smile. His girlfriend was in the front seat with a dog the size of a small cat, and he had already thrown two big surfboards in the back so we could get in the water before class. I was definitely not going to turn down any offers of surfing in Hawaii, so we went straight for the beach. Rylan's girlfriend laughed at me as we walked out of the car for bringing my sunscreen lotion towards the water. Apparently, it was a very Hawaii thing to do, but I enjoyed being an uncool tourist with no idea of local etiquette. The confidence from being in the water the day before was high, and I paddled out with a big smile. I breathed heavily from trying to catch up with Rylan, who seemed to have some kind of engine on his board with the speed he was able to shoot through the water. Dark clouds of a thunderstorm were hanging over the mountain outside of Honolulu. Where we floated around, it was still blue sky and sunshine, but the storm had made the waves bigger, and to be honest, they were a bit intimidating. I just barely managed to go over them as they hit me on the way out. I remember a story the guys in Taiwan told me about practicing turtle diving for weeks and weeks to become comfortable with paddling out in the big waves. I had a feeling that the time had come for me to conquer my fear of going under the waves. I was right. As we were almost out, a wave that must have been 2 or 2.5 meters high towered up in front of me. It looked evil and brutal, ready to eat me like a little piece of Haole sushi. I paddled hard towards it, hoping that I would be able to get over it before it started crashing. I quickly realized that I was not going to make it in time. Rylan had already dived under it and was waiting for me on the other side. I could see his silhouette through the massive wall of water that was coming toward me with thunderous power. I was humbled by the force of nature and the incredible insignificance of my own existence in the universe. The wave looked like it could kill me, and even worse, it looked like it was planning on it. My heart pounded, and the adrenaline rushed through my veins. It was fight or flight. I had no option but to go under. If I didn't, the sea would throw me around like a ragdoll, pin me to the bottom, and eat me alive. You grab that board by the sides, roll under it, going upside down, and right before you hit the wave, you kick the motherfucker with your feet, bro, Gray had said in Taiwan. There was no way around it. I got ready to fill my lungs with air, but was gasping to breathe from being so nervous. The wave was closing in, it was now or never. When it was just a few meters ahead of me, I grabbed the board by the edges, holding on to it as hard as I could. I looked up one last time at the wave of my destiny. A huge blue wall of water right in front of me. Little white splashes on top of it revealed that it was about to crash right on top of me in a matter of seconds. Then I took a deep breath, pinched my eyes, and rolled under the board, turning myself upside down. As I could feel the wave coming in, I kicked the tail end up with the toes of my right foot, angling the nose downwards in the water. Then came the rush. Thousands of tons of water raced past me with scary force, like I was being flushed out in a giant toilet. It whistled in my ears, like when you put your head out of the window of a driving car. I was ready for violence, but suddenly I felt calm. Inside the powerful current under the wave, I felt weightless, like I was dancing a peaceful ballet in space, floating in a fixed position, holding the board with one foot on the end of it, waiting for the rage of nature above me to pass by. The ocean lifted me gently to the surface, and I popped my head up. I wiped the water out of my eyes, turned around, and saw my once-was death sentence roaring towards the beach. I did it. I fucking did it. It felt like I was on drugs, as my brain decided to reward me by dumping liters of endorphins into my blood. I shouted to Ryland in excitement. 20 meters ahead of me, he sat calmly on his board with a big smile, throwing a hang loose sign to me. To him, the wave had just been a small bump on the road. To me, it had been a crossroad in my life. From that moment on, everything changed. I dived under every big wave and laughed to myself every time I was hanging under them. I had conquered the first big milestone in the quest that was my fear of the ocean. The chemicals of my brain had changed. Neuron paths had been carved. A new level of confidence was injected into my system. That wave made me a different person. After another few hours in the water, battling one big wave after the other like it was the open weight division, we drove to Ryland's gym to train. It was a nice, clean gym. A small group of blue belts were working on some technique, and I got to roll with Ryland and another black belt. They were extremely tough, and Ryland completely toyed with me. He was strong, fast, and always a step or two ahead. His game was really tight and left no room for me to play the seated wrestling guard I was trying to practice. We clapped hands when the timer beeped and I fell down onto my back, soaked in sweat. I was starving after a long day of working out, so I ordered a lot of food while we talked about the usual stuff I talk with people about on the trip, namely traveling and jiu-jitsu. One of the guys asked me what route I was planning to take. I didn't really know yet at that point. I had a ticket to New York and that was basically it. I was thinking of going across the US to California for the World Championships and then make my way down through South America until I hit Brazil. I had a few places I really wanted to visit on the way, but nothing was settled. I told them I actually had no idea of how the rest of my trip would end up looking. Another black belt from the gym had been to Brazil for training. He wasn't impressed. It's just too dangerous. We couldn't walk on the streets at night. The Jesus statue is nothing but a statue. You walk up some stairs, turn the corner, and there is a statue. Then you go down again, he said. I found his absolute lack of enthusiasm in describing his travel experiences quite entertaining. He could write the worst guidebook in history. Brazil was still almost like a mythical destination to me, but it also worried me a bit. I had heard too many stories about how dangerous it was, but I knew there was no way around it. I had to go and check it out myself. It would be months later though, so there was no need to worry about it yet. I didn't even know what to do in Hawaii yet. That was how little I had planned. I took a bus up north to visit another of Jonathan's jiu-jitsu friends, Andrew. He was half Danish and lived in a nice little house near the water. On the wall, he had a rack full of surfboards and a mountain bike hanging from the ceiling. It was late evening as I arrived and I went straight to bed, sleeping on a big mattress on the living room floor. An email ticked in from a reader of my blog training at Henso's Academy who had set me up with a guest card. It seemed like my training in New York was taken care of and I was excited to finally go train in that legendary gym after visiting the city so many times without doing it. A thunderstorm had moved in on the island and the rain was hammering away on the roof. It was one of the most intense storms I had experienced in a long time. Every few seconds, lightning would flash outside the window and light up the living room. I rolled onto my back and closed my eyes, still holding my phone in my hand. I could feel the waves in my body from sitting on the board in the water all day. The rage of nature rumbled right over my head as the little house protected me and kept me safe and calm. The more intense it was, the more peaceful I felt. Suddenly, a giant lightning struck right outside the house, immediately followed by a loud click sound and a roar that made me think I would go deaf. My body instinctively reacted by moving into fetal position, curling up the sheets underneath me. The phone I had in my hand went flying through the air, hitting the wall. Adrenaline rushed through my veins as nature had just reminded me who was the boss. It took a while for my heart rate to drop to a level where I could fall asleep. "Did you hear the thunder last night?" Andrew asked in the morning. "Yeah, it kept me awake a little bit," I laughed. After a long day of sightseeing on the North Shore, my body was really tired. My brain was having none of it though, and worked hard to stay awake. I started to feel like I had been traveling too slowly, that I had been staying too long in each place. I missed the high pace at the beginning of the trip, where I moved to new places every 2 days. I had spent a long time in Bali, Taiwan, Tokyo, and Hawaii, and now I was going to be in New York for more than a week. I was eager to step it up a gear and travel fast again. I longed for the high-paced change of scenes and the feeling of being overwhelmed with new impressions every day. I promised myself that after New York, I would go all in and get as many stamps as possible in my passport before my time ran out and I had to head back home. Surfing in Hawaii had been a great experience for me, and I got up early in the morning of my last day to spend as many hours in the water as I could before I had to leave. It was a sunny day and the waves were nice and calm. I really started to get a feeling for it and caught the longest one I had ridden so far. The view from standing up on the board as it gently pushed me towards the beach was really nice. The palm tree, the people on the beach, the pink hotel from all the movies. Another beginner surfer was struggling to paddle out to the waves and had stopped to watch me ride all the way in. He shouted to me and gave me a thumbs up as I passed him. It is somewhat of a cliche that jiu-jitsu guys also surf, but it had become so obvious for me to see the connection. Fear. As you confront it on the mats against the opponents, you have to confront it in the ocean against the waves. It takes patience, hard work, and failures in order to somehow control the external force for just a split second and get a slight taste of success to just reach it with your fingertips. And as you think you got it, a bigger wave or a stronger opponent always shows up and beats your ego down once again, proving to you that you will always be a beginner, always have something to improve, and something more to learn about yourself. Like jiu-jitsu humbles you by the defeats of your opponent, so does surfing by the defeats of nature. No one will ever rise above either one of them and stay there. It's an internal struggle that sharpens and strengthens mind and body in the process. I had fallen in love with surfing and was sad that I lived in a place where it was nearly impossible to practice. Steven took me to the airport. I was sad to say goodbye to him. He was obviously not a white belt, so I told him to put on a blue instead for the future. He had trained for a long time with no one to promote him and was probably even at a purple belt level, so it made no sense that he was teaching as a white belt. I was sad to leave Hawaii and even sadder to leave Steven, who ended up becoming a very special friend to me. We connected in so many ways, and I have rarely met anyone within jiu-jitsu that is so spiritually similar to me. As we said goodbye, he gave me the bracelet made of large brown beads that he had been wearing around his wrist since I met him. it would become my token for good luck during my travels. I stood in line to check in and was sad to leave. What amazing people I've met and experiences I had in Hawaii, a place that I had even thought of skipping because the ticket was so expensive from Japan. For the lifetime of memories it gave me, I would have gladly paid 10 times as much. I wondered if this could go on, if I could keep going to random places and find these great warm feelings, friends, and experiences again and again. It was definitely something I intended to put to the test.